And it's the first of the month. Today is the 7th of July, and that simply means on Metro Talk, first Sunday Roundtable with our Roundtable guests. This morning we have two people who are new to the Roundtable because our regulars, a couple of our regulars are out on vacationing a little bit, or they're out. Eric Mickelson is with us from the Green Party.
Hi, how are you?
And he's filling in for Nicholas Salas, who is the great guy.
But, Dean Meyerson.
Dean Meyerson, I'm sorry. You know, you guys sitting in... I'm looking for the Green Party over there. I'm looking for the Libertarians over there. My pardon. This is a logistical thing in my mind here. But anyway, Eric is with the Green Party. And Jerry, or I should say Gerald Schneider, who is a Libertarian. There you go.
Thank you, Jerry.
There you go. Thank you very much for being with us. And, of course, Dana Jones, our Democrat.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. And James Parmalee, who is with the Northern Virginia GOP... Dom, and I'll say more about that. You've seen him on radio and television. He's putting up a heck of a fight against this referendum in Virginia.
We're doing our best.
And they're trying, although many officials are saying, no, 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 they're not going to go along with this, except one Republican, in fact, I tell you, and I wrote his name down, I don't have it, but he's saying...
Ken Cuccinelli.
Yes, Ken Cuccinelli. He's saying the tax referendum is a ripoff, in so many words.
Absolutely.
Do you agree with that, Dana?
Well,
not to put you on the spot.
Not to put you on the spot. I just want to make sure that I'm right on this. James, there's only one Republican agreeing with this.
Actually,
this isn't a GOP-Democrat issue at all, right?
Oh, actually, what it is an issue of elected officials and the people.
And the people.
The people are generally against this tax. The elected officials have found a new way to get more money out of us for bigger government. And that's why, they've been pushing this. Governor Warner has made this the centerpiece. Who's a Democrat. Governor Warner, right. Democrat, has made this the centerpiece of his agenda, and we're planning on beating it.
Okay, now, just because Virginia has always had somewhat of a, in the past, let's say, 10 years, we've been struggling with a couple different tax issues in Virginia. I think also because a lot of people think that there are two Virginias, in fact. There's the Northern Virginia, that's all the suburbs of D.C., and there's the rest of Virginia. Which the rest of Virginia likes.
I like the way you said that.
They like to think of themselves as completely different because, they are more of your thinking.
Right.
There's a lot of conservative or moderate people in the rest of Virginia. Now, whatever happened to the car tax? Because you're the expert here on Virginia politics.
Right.
Happened to that? Because the last administration had made a lot of promises.
They flunked out on the car tax.
Yeah, we never really saw the end of the car tax. Whatever happened to that?
Well, Governor Gilmore, when he ran in 97, promised a five-year plan to get rid of the car tax.
Right.
His term lasted 4 years. You're not allowed to reelect governors in Virginia at single terms. And during his 4 years, he kept his promise. In fact, the big fight they had in Richmond his last year was he put it into his final budget, which would carry over into the fifth year, a complete elimination of the car tax. And what happened was Governor Warner, the Democrat, came in and said all bets are off. He was not going to follow through on the promise that had been made. And so, thanks to Democrat Governor Warner, 30% of the car tax is still there. Governor Gilmore did keep his promise.
I think if we remember, I remember Republicans even the fact that Gilmore was actually leaving. He was pretty much shut
the
door.
There
was a lot of discontent with the voters of Virginia. Let's be honest, Republicans and Democrats alike. I think that's why Warner had such a wonderful success last election.
Well, Governor Gilmore left us with the biggest Republican majority ever in the history of Virginia.
Yeah, but bringing it up to the tax referendum, this is the thing right now.
Right, the tax referendum now.
And I want to go back to what you said, and this is not to pick on James Homily Day, but when you said that the elected officials, you made it sound like the elected officials against the people.
Yes.
And that's really not the case.
Oh, yes, it is.
Jim?
In this instance, yes, it is.
But I've talked to a lot of people in Northern Virginia. Like I think Dana very nicely put it, Northern Virginia is a lot different from Richmond South.
And that's why they're pulling this scam on us. The folks in Richmond.
But people
is it
are
a scam or is it a way to pay for schools?
No, it's not a way to pay for schools. Wait, let me do a little educational effort here.
Let me ask Eric and let me ask Jerry, because I don't want them to be left out of this. Guys, isn't the big thing in Northern Virginia, like every place else in this region, transportation? And that's what's behind this tax referendum, according to Governor Warner?
Well, I actually am not tremendously familiar with Virginia politics. I'm from Anne Arundel County, Maryland.
Sure.
But if I understand it, I think that the idea of sort of a referendum or allowing the people to decide makes a lot of sense in sort of a genuine democratic spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't I wouldn't object to the idea of a referendum that's put before the people in principle. You know, as to whether it's a good idea or whether it's, you know, wasteful spending, again, I don't really know enough about the bill to be able to comment on that.
Sure. A very famous economist said, Bastiat was his name, French economist, said that democracy is a form of government where everyone tries to live at the expense of everyone else. Personally, I would prefer user fees to general taxes. When people pay for the services that they use, they tend to be more responsible and more careful if it's revenue than any special interest that's able to get somebody elected or reelected is likely to influence how that money is spent, and you don't often get the most efficient or environmentally best sort of transportation.
Well, your party platform,
is having its convention this week, is it not?
Yes,
its national convention. In your party platform, you all actually support and would like a complete
It's really an unfair way of saying a wipeout of taxes. It's more
you want
voluntary
no taxes whatsoever.
We want voluntary commitments to pay for services
right.
and user fees. And by the way, individual libertarians don't necessarily support everything in the party platform. We are very individual.
I think that it has to go to the people. That's what we're all about here. I think each state and, again, the federal government.
Yeah, that's what
it is. And I understand that and I appreciate that. So, but at the same time, we have to make sure that we're fiddling. Again, Virginia has had some problems with a lot of fighting with taxes and so forth. We must pay police, we must pay for our parks, and we must pay for our schools.
Let me do an education. What this tax is, this tax, they put on the ballot for this fall a potential 11% increase in the sales tax. The sales tax would not be for education, not be for parks. What they say it will be for mm-hmm. is some transportation. But here's the problem.
But they're saying major transportation.
Well, they're saying major transportation. But as one of the lead sponsors of this bill said in a debate with me last week, most of it would not go for roads. It would go for mass transit, and it wouldn't build new roads. It would simply start the funding for improvements on existing roads. It's very limited goals.
Okay, let's move on. The referendum is coming up, the tax referendum. I think Dana and Eric made a very interesting point. And, of course, Jim, you're saying that while it's been left up to the people, there's been a snowballing of elected officials to throw it on the people. And, Jerry, you're saying that do away with tax referendums and come up with a better way.
Yeah, because, majority rule doesn't necessarily have any rights.
Right.
And the tendency is for people to want to spend other people's money in ways they think are best. Who knows which is the best way to spend? Do government officials know more than individuals how best to solve these problems? History indicates that's not the case.
Well, that's what they're elected to do.
Okay.
They're elected by the people.
But they're elected by a majority, by everybody.
Can I say one last thing about it,
sure.
though? Currently, Northern Virginia gets back about 40 cents on the dollar for every dollar we send down for transportation. If we pass this massive tax increase on ourselves, the folks in Richmond will continue to divert money down to the Coalfields Expressway and to other things outside of Northern Virginia. So we won't, in the end, we wouldn't get any additional transportation funding anyway.
The people in Richmond, they like Southern Virginia anyway.
Let's go
move on.
Yep.
Eric Mickelson, Green Party, James Pomeroy, Northern Virginia GOP, Dana Jones, Democrat, and Jerry Schneider, Libertarian, sitting in this morning on the first Sunday roundtable, and you can join us. Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, in a Verizon wireless system. Absolutely free call, and don't wait till we get 5 minutes before 9 o'clock and start calling. Call in now if you have something to gripe about in this whole political arena, and there should be a lot. Okay, guys, let's turn to the George Bush White House. Another military era. A wedding party with 100 women, children, and male civilians wounded and 40 killed after an American bomb hit a cave complex. Who's the terrorist? Some people are asking now. Are we the terrorists or are they the terrorists? Hey, tricky question, I know. I'll start with you, Jerry.
I would say that it's actually the terrorists, because we try to attack people who are already living in Stone Age and push them back into the Stone Age, and we call this collateral damage. But the fact of the matter is that we are indiscriminately trying to get after an enemy without surgically striking against him. And I can't see this happening at all.
Well, we are engaged in this conflict in Afghanistan for the purest of reasons. We have gone over there to fight terrorism. And I got to say, you know, there was a horrible mistake made in bombing that wedding. But, you know, you've got these folks flying up there at 40,000 feet or whatever, and all of a sudden a wedding party, at the end of the wedding party, the tradition evidently in Afghanistan is to take your AK-47s, everybody go outside and start firing into the air. So let's have a little bit of understanding for potentially if you're flying up there in a combat situation and all of a sudden a couple dozen men are firing AK-47s at you, perhaps you get a little confused. It doesn't excuse the error, but it does explain that it wasn't just, you know, this guy randomly dropping bombs on them.
So would you say that an apology might be merited?
Yes, we have. The United States has apologized, and it certainly is merited.
But the question is...
I think this obviously, the news of this greatly saddened and sickened me, and I think it did most all Americans, because when we saw the pictures of five-year-old girls in party dresses in the hospital receiving medical attention at our hands, this is horrible. And I think that more than anything, aside from a horrible mistake, we must, as a nation, be careful. This is a foreign relations issue. This isn't just us against Afghanistan. We also have other nations in on this war, and they are very much into accountability. You know, they are going to support us, but we must have responsibility in this. And I think that with all the intelligence that we have, with all of the wonderful personnel and highly trained individuals that we have,
how could you bomb a wedding? That's my question.
And with customs, I mean, we do have aides in the Army who are just in charge of customs and knowing what we do socially. So seeing that this has happened, we really have to take a step back and say, let's make sure what we're doing is not just dropped.
Ever since we've been in this conflict, we find us, Americans, with all of the...
Right.
All of the mistakes of people being bombed mistakenly, bombs or planes are flying out. I mean,
absolutely.
The problems come from us, and we hear little about problems coming from us.
I think because we're the main ones in this war. I mean, we are number one in this war, and I think my friend here across the aisle, the Republican, would agree with me that we all want to see an end. We all want to see an end to terrorism and to all of this, but at the same time, we have to watch and be careful with other nations how we go about this.
I think that this raises some interesting issues about the end of terrorism. Do you end terrorism by making more enemies, killing innocent civilians, whether intentionally or not? I don't think that breeds the kind of environment.
But it goes back to the question, who's the terrorist?
Water down the word terrorism. I mean, this is in no way, shape, or form terrorism. So, a military in a combat situation making a mistake is not terrorism. Getting into a civilian airliner, hijacking the plane, and plowing it into the World Trade Center, that, my friends, is terrorism. This is not terrorism.
On telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon Wireless System, lines are open. If we go on to another topic, you want to talk about the topic we talked about previously, that's perfectly okay. John in Fairfax has been waiting. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I originally wanted to talk about, transportation tax. You know, there's a bill that we passed in the federal Congress, the PDUFA, Prescription Drug User Fee Act, and it basically lets drug companies pay a user fee to the FDA to get their applications processed faster, and it puts more money in FDA. But there was a trigger mechanism put in that bill that if Congress later on decided, well, they're getting all that money from you to fund them as much, if it dropped below a certain point, then the user fee went away. The problem with the transportation tax is exactly what's been said earlier on your show, is that Southern Virginia politicians, they got their money in Northern Virginia, we don't have to give them as much out of the general transportation fund and with money elsewhere. I mean, let's be honest, Northern Virginia has been sort of the stepchild of Virginia for years. We like your money, don't bother us.
Right.
Send it down here.
And in fact, Whit Clement, the transportation commissioner down in Richmond, has already said in the Danville paper that he's fighting hard for this referendum because if it doesn't pass, they're going to have to divert money from rural areas back to Northern Virginia. So he knows the score.
Exactly.
But how do you answer to Kate Hanley, chair of the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, who says this referendum will definitely save some of the pain of problems when it comes to transportation, the gridlock, the congestion?
Jerry, have you looked at Kate's campaign vouchers? Kill Hazel, big on there. Let's understand who wants this tax. It's the developers up here, because that means that's less they have to pay for.
Okay.
It's less out of pocket. one last comment. You know, the last situation you were talking about.
Yeah, John.
I'm 53 years old. I'm a combat veteran in Vietnam. There is nobody that's ever served in Vietnam that blames anybody that shot those people. Certainly it's tragic. But all the talking heads get on here and say, oh, they did this, they did this. Not one of them has ever been in combat themselves. If they have been, if you haven't been there in that situation where you don't know who the enemy is, they all look, everybody looks alike, and somebody starts shooting at you, I guarantee you the first thing you're going to do is fire back first and figure it out later.
Okay, John, thank you very much for your call. Everybody looks alike, so we bomb them?
No, you don't bomb them. But in fact, the civilian casualties in this conflict have been way lower than most other places. I mean, the American military has done some in trying to cut down on these sorts of things. But there's a reason why they call it the fog of war.
Exactly, this is war. And you know what we're also doing there, in all fairness? We're also protecting the Afghan people. The way that they've treated women, the way that they've treated people throughout time is horrific. And the reason that we're over there is not just because of ourselves, for the interest to almost police the world, because if when they turn on us, they can turn on anyone.
We have a more in-depth plan. Actually, we don't distinguish between what is a crime and what is a war. When someone commits an act, a terrorist act, for example, we should go after the criminals. You don't go after the families, relations, or anyone else. We really shouldn't be there. If we weren't there, none of these collateral actions should happen. We have surgical strikes, going after the people who are guilty, and not necessarily other people who are the example. None of us here support all the policies of our own government. What makes us think that people in Afghanistan or anywhere else support the policies of their government so that everyone in that country is an enemy that should be attacked?
That's why we went in there and liberated that country. And the vast majority of Afghans are overjoyed that we are there and we're doing the right thing. This was simply a mistake.
This is a one-time mistake. Unfortunately, this is why war is so ugly, because no matter what war that we're in, no matter what battle that we're in, this is what happens.
The question again, is this a criminal act against us, or was this really a war?
No, this isn't a criminal act. This was a mistake. This is a mistake. There's no way.
No, I'm talking about the actions against us by terrorists from Afghanistan.
That was not a mistake.
That was a criminal act.
That's
not
right.
Necessarily a war that we go against the whole country.
It's a war.
That's the problem with our policy, Republicans and Democrats.
We went to the Taliban. I mean, what other country does this? We went to the Taliban and said, you know what? You guys are supporting terrorism, but we're going to give you a month to turn over the criminals. I mean, other countries don't do that in history. They refused to turn over the terrorists. We went in and we got them. We liberated the country. We've done the right thing.
This is the arrogance of the first order, that we as Americans go in there and liberate people by killing them. It's an old thing of trying, you know, we've got to kill them to save them.
No, that's not what is happening at all.
I mean, 90% probably of Afghans are overjoyed that we went in there.
You talk about
party animals. I see a Democrat and a Republican on the same ticket here. I think that's great. Anyway, we're talking about various issues, and you'd like to join us. Our lines open at 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Eric Mickelson, along with James Pomeli and Dana Jones and Jerry Schneider, the four here to discuss several issues that we certainly talk about every day around our coffee table or at breakfast, at dinner, wherever, or at work. The issues that we are most concerned with that we hear about in our daily press. Let's talk to Pat in Alexandria. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, dear. I'm glad to see that the Democrats and the Republicans have finally gotten some common sense. It's amazing. On the new tax referendum, my grandmother had an old saying, you don't give the public officials more money than they need because then they'll come back for more. Northern Virginia has been screwed for as long as I have lived here and probably longer than that.
Uh-huh.
And I really don't think that downstate wants to have anything to do with this. We are not rebels. We are Northerners as far as they are concerned. Fine. Now, to the gentleman who was so concerned about the Afghanis, I say this to you. You go in, you eliminate the people who hurt your people. You can have collateral damage. There's always collateral damage in war. But I certainly, sir, consider the life and loss of more than 3,000 American lives by people who were supported by the Taliban a hell of a lot more collateral damage than what you are talking about. I have some daddy. He is serving now. Remember one thing, sir. The people who cause so-called collateral damage are saving your life and keeping your butt free. Bye, Jerry.
Okay. Thank you very much, Pat. Let's go to Joe and Chevy Chase. Good morning, Joe.
How you doing?
Fine.
Chris, I just want to make a quick comment. I saw on TV the history of the bombing during the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
No, and we went over and we bombed Germany city after city. We never considered how many civilians were killed because we were at war. Same thing with Colonel Doolittle when he went over Tokyo. If you're in a war, you're in a war. And unfortunately, that's part of the effort of trying to win it. And try to pick and choose where you're going to bomb, unfortunately, can't be done because of the situation. If the American people would have known what was going on in the Second World War, the bombing of all the civilians in Germany, would we have stopped? That's the question. What we have done in the Second World War, is that justified?
Okay. Thank you very much, Joe. Appreciate your call. Let's get away from the bombing and get back to the holding on of the GOP, and that is the fight of the GOP to keep the House control. What about that, Jim? There's a big fight in the 8th District of Maryland with Connie Morella, the Mark Shrivers, the Kennedys, all over Maryland.
Well, everyone's out to get poor Connie, but poor Connie has certainly gotten through before because the people of that district know that Connie Morella delivers for them, that she's a strong advocate for the interests of the district, and I think she's going to win this like she has before.
Well, this is a very interesting race, and having lived in Maryland my entire life and gone to college there and working in the state house, I find this a very interesting race. And if nothing else, I am a spectator to the sport, as many of us are around this table. And I have to say that everyone loves Connie. Mrs. Morella is a very wonderful lady and a great grandmother. There's some things, though, that I've been surprised about, some votes recently. Actually, last week, H.R. 4954, the Medicare Modernization and Prescription Drug Act, wasn't what the people of her district would have wanted. There's also some concerns regarding corporate responsibility. I think this is something that we very much are interested in the light of WorldCom, Enron, Global Crossing, and what will be my soon-to-be favorite spectator sport, Halliburton, which Vice President Cheney is very involved with. There is several votes on corporate responsibility, and let's face it, I don't think anybody here would argue the fact that the majority of Montgomery County constituents are heavily invested into the stock market. I mean, this is a fact. And not only that, but thousands of people have lost their jobs. WorldCom alone, we lost, 17,000? But however, on all the key votes in the House of Representatives, Mrs. Morella did not vote with the way that we should have, the way that her constituents would have wanted.
How exactly would you have had her vote?
4931, H.R. 4931.
And tell us what you would have expected her to do.
Well, I think that we need more, we need to close the loopholes in corporations to pay their fair share of taxes.
Well, that has nothing to do with this. That has nothing to do with Enron or any of those companies.
No, it does.
It has nothing at all to do with that.
No, it was the retirement savings Social Security Act.
No.
Of 2002, it was.
No. The people who lost their savings during Enron were because they put all their money into one stock, which everyone will tell you not to do. The reason Enron went under was...
401k.
Their retirement funds are gone.
Okay. Yes, because they foolishly put them in all in one stock.
They worked for the companies, James. They had no IRA.
I didn't think we were talking about Enron in this time. Frankly, I don't think it matters whether a Republican or Democrat is elected to Congress in the 8th Congressional District. The fact of the matter is they both use the same sort of command and control and tax issues. The only difference between Republicans and Democrats is there's a higher concentration of conservatives among the Republicans. Basically speaking, they use the same methods and the same tools, taxation and control, to get what they want. Their only difference is you can't predict what they're going to do. The polls are likely to direct how they're going to vote because that's what gets them elected and reelected, and they have no real principle as such.
Senator Chuck Hagel is a Republican of Nebraska, and he said that the Congress is in no mood to tiptoe around something like this because the mood of the American public is ugly on this. It's the front page of the Washington Post.
And that's why
today.
Connie Morella is doing something about it.
I think that this sort of post hoc analysis is kind of interesting because I think at least 2 years ago, Ralph Nader was warning about the issues of increased corporate influence in government, the fact that most of these folks in Congress have various organizations. I mean, for God's sakes, Enron was George Bush's number one contributor.
And a big contributor to Democrats also.
Well, hey, I'm not arguing with that. The Greens don't take PAC or corporate money for exactly this kind of reason, because there needs to be autonomy. The government needs to be working for what's in the best interests of its constituents, and corporations, quite frankly, aren't constituents in the same way that human beings are. I think that all of these issues, again, point to the fact that you know, lax government regulation and that sort of thing are allowing these sorts of companies to get away with too much and, you know, with regards to auditing and sort of lax.
So getting back to the 8th District, do you think that Connie Morella stands a very strong chance, mediocre chance, or do you think the winner on the Democratic side?
I think a strong chance because this is the only argument Dana's got against her, and Dana's already said she's a wonderful woman and a wonderful congresswoman. Then I think Dana should
vote with what Dana the constituents want.
I think Dana should join with me in supporting Connie Morella.
Okay.
I'm not a great prognosticator, but obviously Connie Morella has a track record that would indicate she's likely to win. In fact, I think she's going to win a lot against Think.
Okay. Eric?
Well, and I know a lot of liberal Democrats who are very happy with Ms. Morella. I think that
all happy with her
are happy with her and have voted for her in the past. I think, you know, the one argument Democrats could make is that if she's voting with the Republican majority on issues, that is you know, working counter to their interests.
Okay. Getting out of the 8th District, let's look at the statewide election or campaign where Michael Steele, who used to be with our panel, no wonder that's the reason why he was missing all the time.
Yeah,
because he's out trying to get.
Often.
He's trying to get on the gubernatorial ticket. Anyway, Robert Ehrlich, who is the Republican candidate for governor of Maryland, has selected Chairman Michael Steele, chairman of the GOP in Maryland. Jim, what will this do for Eric's big appeal and his big fight against big Kathleen Kennedy Townsend?
Well, I think it's clear that he is going
after... Not that the lady is big,
right,
but, you know, big from...
I think it's a wonderful choice. It is clear that he is going after the very influential listeners of this station. Mm-hmm. And, you know, clearly picking up a panelist from this station is the way to go. And I also down the line would be perfectly happy to serve as lieutenant governor, and I'm sure Dana would like to run. Also,
I have no intention of doing anything.
Don't forget, there's a libertarian candidate for governor too, Spiro Lancaster.
There you go.
Michael Steele is a wonderful choice, and he's a very inclusive choice, and a very aggressive campaigner, and I think he's going to help the Republican ticket to victory.
Only African American state GOP chief in the count in the country has his choice for lieutenant governor. What does this mean? I'm going to start with my friend over here, Eric, and then I'll come to Dana.
Well, you know...
And then I'll come to a libertarian candidate.
I think it was a pretty good choice. The couple of times I've heard Mr. Steele speak, he seems a reasonable person. I think, you know, he moderates Ehrlich's extremes to a large degree, and I think that, you know, that politically, that's probably not a bad move. My own sense is... you know, I'd rather be seeing the Republicans move to the center than seeing the Democrats move to the right, which I think Ms. Townsend did with her selection of Mr. Larson, a former Republican, as her candidate. And again, in a state where Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1, roughly, it's disappointing to see the Democratic Party taking these...
Dana, the question here is, because this guy's American, does this mean that he's going to pull more of the African-American vote to the side or to any side? Because there's always this assumption that black folks are going to vote Democrat. And
well, I think that
we're seeing different numbers today.
Right. I think if we look at the past two elections with Glenn Denning, actually, Mr. Steele was on the Republican ticket. He was running as comptroller, I believe. And the African-American community came out in record numbers for the Glenn Denning ticket because... I think that we talk, you know, well, will this bring the African-American community out? The African-American community is going to vote on issues. They read the paper. They know what their issues are. They know what's important to them. The people of the city know that they want more money for their schools. They want more money for their children. They want more money for their police force. They need a safer environment. And I think the issues they're going to vote for.
Know they haven't gotten any of those things with 8 years of Glenn Denning.
Well, that's not... I think that Mara O'Malley and Glenn Denning are doing a fabulous job. Mara O'Malley is doing a wonderful job in this area.
Mara O'Malley is
the mayor of Baltimore.
I bet you some money. The mayor of Baltimore is not going to vote for the Democratic ticket.
Let's also take turns. But nevertheless,
on this show, please.
You had mentioned...
family show.
Mr. Steele is really coming, and I agree with my friend here, Eric. He says that Mr. Steele was picked to help moderate the extreme right position of Mr. Ehrlich. He's from a lifelong Democratic family. He was very active, from my understanding, in the Democratic Party in Maryland. And he does somewhat moderate this ticket because I don't think it would have nearly the success if he did not pull someone in that made him more moderate.
Jeff, how did let me turn to the Libertarian candidate?
I'm not a
candidate.
What
is he standing for? Not you, but your candidate.
Spiro Lancaster represents a real choice. I personally think that the blacks and African Americans are likely in Prince George's County in Baltimore to vote Democrats, no matter anything else. We know in connection with a Supreme Court justice that being black is not necessarily going to command votes of blacks if they don't have the right issues. I think you're really right that issues are more important, but they're knee-jerk Democrat voters.
But isn't it getting more like today that people, even outside of the, say, black community, with all communities, people are voting more towards issues. People are looking at individual candidates. May they be independent?
I think
absolutely.
Because people...
And they should.
Uh-huh.
And they should. It's not about a party.
Right.
And you're hearing this from...
That's not true. I think people still vote symbolically.
Issues.
That even though they care about issues, I just heard one person, for example, at a luncheon, told a woman who was a Democrat who was very upset with someone because... they had suggested supporting Republicans because Republicans are more favorable towards Israel. And she said, well, I'll never talk to that person again. It wasn't the issue. I'm a Democrat. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I'll always vote Democrat.
Sure,
and I think that's what happens.
Well, regardless how you vote, you can always put your 2 cents in on Metro Talk, Sunday Roundtable. My lines are completely open. We'd like to hear from you as we talk with our host. Eric Mickelson with the Green Party, James Pomeroy, who is our regular Northern Virginia GOP.com person who represents Northern Virginia and the GOP all the way. Dana Jones, who is our regular Democrat, and she represents the Democrats all the way. And, of course, we also have Schneider, who is filling in this morning on the Libertarian Party for our good buddy Nicholas.
And Spiro is governor.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. 301-230-0980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Lines are open as to how you feel about not only the election, but the other things we've discussed this morning, which so far we've talked about the error that was made in the Vetting Party in Afghanistan. We opened up with the tax referendum of Northern Virginia. Right now, let's turn to the fact that Representative J.C. Watts plans to retire in Oklahoma. This is really something that, along with the Connie Morello thing in the 8th District, it doesn't look too good like control over the House if Watts retires and Connie Morello loses.
Well, that's J.C. Watts' district is reliably Republican, so it's going to be a Republican being replaced by a Republican. And, yes, Connie Morello's... position is important, and she's very important to reelect her for the citizens of Maryland, for the citizens of her district, because you're going to have a Republican majority continuing after this election. And who is better, who's best to serve the voters of the 8th District of Maryland? A senior Republican who is going
to
represent the district and a majority?
Let's talk about Representative Watts. I'm very interested in this because I work on the Hill. And in the Roll Call, which is our famous newspaper, a leading Republican who did not want his name said, you know what, if he leaves, he leaves. I'm sick of holding his hand. I'm sick of his front. But there's a real feeling on the Hill that he wasn't treated the way he wanted to be treated. Representative Watts wanted a more senior position on a committee vote.
He ranked number four
in their political party, yes. And so he was their spokesman. But as far as being on the Ways and Means, being on the Budget Committee, being on Appropriations, you know, he wanted a really senior position. Even in national security, he wanted something more in their committee. And
he was pretty senior. I mean, he's pretty senior, and he did very well. Every senator thinks
committee vote.
Every senator thinks I should be president, and every member of Congress thinks I should either be in the Senate or the House. I mean, it's just the function of the egos. They're all very qualified.
Jerry Schneider.
I want to be careful of innuendo, but it's kind of interesting that so many of these congressmen retire after they've served enough to get a pension for the rest of their life. I've noticed this happening time after time and time. And right now, Watts is qualified to get a pension, a very generous pension, for the rest of his life.
Do you agree with that, Eric?
It sounds fairly plausible. This could be a James Jeffords kind of situation where maybe he just feels like, the party isn't in line with
exactly what we're dealing with.
James Jeffords, if you bring that name up, it sounds like you're saying he could switch.
He may just be tired of sort of the way that Republican politics working on the Hill. I don't know enough about the situation.
Let's talk to Jim in Fairfax. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
Thank you.
I'd just like to make a quick statement concerning the highway situation we have here. We pay federal taxes. I live in Fairfax. We pay federal taxes. We have toll roads over here in Virginia. Maryland and Virginia or in the middle of the north-south corridor, all transportation going up and down the East Coast. It seems to me that we ought to get our congressmen in New Jersey and New York and Florida and Virginia and get these people together to decide that we don't want to run all this north-south traffic through Fairfax County by simply widening the 495s. I've lived here for 25 years. Also, the EPA has relaxed the air quality standards. I can't hardly breathe in this county anymore. And we want to put more traffic into this metropolitan area. We've got to wake up. We've got to get these highways away from this area so it only accommodates the local traffic and get that interstate traffic somewhere else. Fairfax County voters, wake up. You're getting ripped off.
Actually, when you look at it, I agree that we should have the eastern bypass and or the western bypass.
Jim, turn your radio down, please.
It's down.
Okay.
This referendum will not fund any of that. So if you're concerned about the traffic in Fairfax County and you would like the diverted by the eastern and western bypasses, this referendum is not going to help. This referendum is simply a means for Richmond to take more of our money and continue to return a tiny, tiny amount of our tax dollars back to Northern Virginia for transportation. So everyone should vote no on this.
Exactly my sentiments, and but we need a bigger solution. We need the Congress. We need the people to understand that the D.C. is our capital. We need to protect it. We don't want to get people to the point where living in this area is unhealthy.
Okay.
And it is becoming unhealthy environmentally.
Jim, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, my friend. Have a good day. Let's talk to Durbin and Silver Spring. Good morning, Durbin.
Yeah, how you doing, Jerry? I listen to your show every Sunday morning. Great show.
I appreciate it, my friend.
Okay, my question is how come we don't hear more about in the media from the Libertarian candidates? And I used to be a Democrat, I used to be a Republican, I switched parties and I went to the Libertarians. And the Libertarians seem to offer everything that most of my friends and I, you know, that we like to see. They have clear understanding of what's going on with their tax money. And the Republicans and Democrats, all they talk about is the same things all the time. And the Libertarians have hit it right on the head. People are tired of paying taxes and not having a voice and say-so from our elected officials. Could you comment on that, please?
I'm going to preempt Gerald, but I'll let him get to this in a second. I think that one of the issues, this is Eric Michelson from the Green Party, is that in Maryland politics in particular, the Republicans and the Democrats have created a situation whereby political competition is essentially stifled. Third parties have to petition in order to get recognized and for each of their candidates to get 1% of the voters in the area in order just to get on the ballot. So for Spear Lancaster, who's running for governor, he has to collect over 27,000 signatures just to get his name on the ballot for you to vote for him. So whether, you know, you're on the left or the right or any side of the political spectrum that isn't encompassed by the Democrats and the Republicans, there's an organized effort to shut out alternative political voices. So I think that from a general point of view, there are ballot access reforms in Maryland that need to be accomplished in order to get more voices in the spectrum. But
Jerry Schneider,
Eric is absolutely correct. But there are other issues involved, too. For example, people tend to vote for the lesser of evils. And somehow they think that if they vote for a Democrat or Republican, they're going to vote on the basis of the lesser of evil. But all they get is the same kinds of policies. They never seem to learn. They always say they're going to throw the guys out that they don't like, or the women, as the case may be, but they don't do it. They just vote the same old ways, and they do vote symbolically. Let's face it. They may have many issues that they're concerned about, but when you vote categorically. You don't vote on a line issue. So you vote Democrat or Republican normally in this county and in this area, because that's what people usually do. Once they wake up and they demand an alternative, we'll get more Libertarians.
Okay, John, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, and one thing before you... Well, he's gone now. But one thing for sure, regardless, I just can't get over these party animals in the District of Columbia on these corners.
Well, why don't you like
them? What a waste of money.
You know, I don't know. They're just silly to me.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jerry.
No,
they are silly.
This is the city of tourism.
But what about the party? Yeah. So I just think the Republican, I saw an elephant Republican in front of a D.C. government agency, which one would say. The Duncan should have been there, right? You know, I mean, whoever put him up.
Jerry, no, I think it's a good point. In the D.C. statehood, Green Party actually tried to get, Green Party symbols included, right? Because again, it is an expenditure of taxpayer dollars.
So,
I don't know if the libertarians did or not, but the issue is, you know, to say that this is a partisan activity, I think, is, you know, flies in the face of the fact that it's party animals. And again, you know,
absolutely right.
Okay. I suppose
let's talk to Robert in Sterling, Virginia. Good morning, Robert.
Yeah, hi, Jerry. Thanks for having me again.
Okay.
Listen, one thing that the Democrats like to do, and Republicans, I think, are getting kind of tired of it, is, you know, when they don't like our ideas, they label us as extremists. And one thing I'd like to find out, as the young lady there labeled Ehrlich as an extremist over in Maryland, far-right extremist, could she please give me the names of three far-left extremists in Maryland?
You only won three in Maryland? No, I mean, let's be honest. First off, the Green candidate also said that. I my favorite part of being on this show, Jerry, is that the young lady always gets pulled out in the Democrats.
How do they know you're young?
How do they know how old I am?
I would just like three names of three extremists, that's all.
Well, you know what? I think that there are plenty of Democrats in the Maryland, which some on the national level would call the Massachusetts annex. And I can't really name three, sorry.
Well, let me just say, for one example of Mr. Ehrlich's extremism, when fellow Republican Wayne Gilchrist from the Eastern Shore was voting to stop open bay dumping, the dumping of silt and whatnot into deep trenches in the Chesapeake Bay, Mr. Ehrlich was supporting this clearly environmentally questionable action. I mean, there are issues whereby...
So what's Glenn Denning supporting?
If you have disagreements, then let's call them disagreements. Let's not label somebody an extremist, please.
I mean, if he agreed with Glenn Denning, then I guess, you know, they're both in the same boat on that. But we're talking about a gubernatorial candidate who is a moderate. This is I'm from Virginia, so all of these Maryland Republicans seem to be moderate.
Connie Morella might be a moderate.
Right, they all want to spend our money.
Robert, thank you very much.
I agree
with you wholeheartedly. The extremists are a lot different than those that you disagree with or agree with, you know? Thank you very much, Robert. Hey, look, guys, we have a few minutes left, and I want to get to this one issue, and that's a biting issue, the death penalty. A U.S. district judge in New York says that the federal death penalty is unconstitutional. At the same time he was saying this, the Attorney General said that he believed that the death penalty was okay and that he ordered federal prosecutors to definitely seek out the death penalty in most federal cases. Now, him now with the Bible in one hand, and he wants to kill people in the other hand.
He doesn't want to kill people. He wants to kill criminals who have committed.
And they're not people. The issue is they may have given up their rights to live. If this is cruel and unusual punishment, I think that, you know, we're talking about Mr. Ehrlich as an extremist. If you really want to point to a Republican extremist, look at Mr. Ashcroft. Here's a guy who purports to support states' rights, but's going around trying to turn, you know, death with dignity laws and medical marijuana laws where individuals who in various states have voted overwhelmingly to support these laws. This guy, I mean, he's incredible. And you know, I realize that a majority of the American public seems to support the death penalty, but, you know, as a Green, we don't think the state should be in the position of taking people's lives. And I think, you know, from a practical standpoint, a lot of other good arguments can be made against the death penalty as well.
Yeah, I agree much with Eric. But I have some mixed emotions about the death penalty. On one hand, if you make a mistake, you can't take it back. Kill somebody innocent, that's bad. On the other hand, the purpose of law, as I understand it, is to make people whole, and that is to give them restitution. And in some cases, it may be that the only way of doing that would be a death penalty. So I do have mixed emotions, but I think it's about the state taking anybody's life.
But the point is, you made the statement, Eric, that most Americans support the death penalty, and recent polls show that's not true.
Well, that's very encouraging to me.
Recent polls now show that many Americans have some question about the fairness of the death penalty.
That doesn't mean they don't support it. That means what they want to do is make sure things are fair. And with the DNA testing they have now, you're getting to where there really is no doubt about their guilt.
There's always a doubt.
I think that we must, I think Mayor Jerry was saying, would support a moratorium, if you will, of pushing the pause button on this. Let's really evaluate who exactly we're killing, if they had adequate representation. And you know, let's face it, the number of people who are poor and receiving, and black and receiving death penalty are in large numbers compared to those who have are very wealthy, have wonderful representation. So I think that we need to look at the situation, evaluate what we're doing, evaluate who's getting the death penalty, and then go on from there.
Well, regardless of whether you're rich and white or poor or black, it's probably a good idea not to go out and kill whole families. And most of the people who are
right.
on death
Let's
row have killed more than one person. I don't think you should make it a racial issue. It's not a racial issue.
I think that
it is a crime issue.
It is a crime issue.
And you tell to the victims that that person really shouldn't be put to death.
And let me tell you that I, in my heart, sometimes I understand, and I have problems with the death penalty as well. A lot of times I support it. I understand why people would feel this way. However, we must make sure that the law applies the same to everyone.
I agree.
Very quickly, Jerry.
The criminal justice system should be based on restitution, not punishment. Wherever possible, we should try to make people.
Okay. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Okay. I mean, we covered a lot of issues today, folks. We went from a weekly bomb by the United States military to a tax referendum, whether it's going to be yes or no in Northern Virginia. Northern Virginia fighting the lower part of the state. One thing, the GOP fight, we got into Connie Morella, Michael Steele, J.C. Watts. We had a lot to talk about, as well as the death penalty. But one thing we did not talk about, and that is combining the FBI and the CIA. We got about 30 seconds left. Impossibility, Jim, Polly.
Oh, gee, that's great, I'm sure.
Okay.
Decentralization is always better than centralization.
Horrible idea.
I think that's impossible to do. We have adequate people in both agencies that need to be supported.
Thank you very much, Eric Mickelson, Green Party. Welcome, and come back and see us again.
Thank you. That's right.
Appreciate it. James Pomeroy, my good buddy from GOP of Northern Virginia. Always a pleasure. Dana Jones, my dear friend from the Democrats
Thank
in
you,
Maryland.
Thank
happy
you. Happy 4th of July.
And happy 4th of July to you, too. Gerald Schneider, thanks for being with us, Libertarian Party. Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Well, that's about it for us this Sunday. We got to get the devil out of here and certainly get out and enjoy the great outdoors. And that's what we're going to do. Want to thank those who helped to put it together. Don't forget, next week, our election forum. Helping those to put it together this morning was John Miller, our technical producer, Lori Klein, our administrator, Quentin. We welcome Quentin to our staff, our public affairs assistant. Our simulcast operator is Paula Casey. Written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is a big 100 WBIG and Sports Talk 980 WTEM public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. Have a good day. Much peace. Much love.